The chopper flared in over the jackstaff, the downwash kicking up a little spray from where crewmen had washed the deck of grit. It hung poised like a hovering insect as the pilot judged speed and windage before lowering the craft toward the pool cover. He kept the power on, so the skids barely put any pressure on the cover, and three doors opened at the same time. The men jumped from the chopper with nylon packs over their shoulders. The pilot needed to make a quick power adjustment to account for the sudden drop in weight. As soon as the doors were closed, the chopper lifted clean and peeled away from the ship.
"Eddie said something about Zelimir Kovac looking like Boris Karloff on a bad day," Mark pointed with his chin.
"The big guy in the middle?
It's gotta be him."
The three men were greeted by a ship's officer but made no move to shake hands. They somehow managed to make their casual clothes, khakis, polo shirts, and light windbreakers, look like military uniforms. It was the matching backpacks, Linda thought.
"What do you think is in those bags?" she asked.
"Change of underwear, fresh socks, a razor. Oh, and guns," Mark said as they turned away from the rail. "Something just occurred to me."
"Yeah, what's that?"
"Would Kovac risk being aboard this ship if they are going to hit it with the virus they used to kill everyone on the Golden Dawn?"
"He would if he'd been vaccinated."
By noon, three-quarters of the people on the ship were suffering cold-like symptoms, and despite precautions, Mark and Linda were included in that group. The high desert wind shrieked across the airfield, throwing up towering clouds of dust that threatened to block out the sky. The pilot of the chartered Citation jet came in on the runway fully 30 feet to the left to account for the crosswind hammering the fuselage. The gear came down with a mechanical whine and thump, and flaps were extended. The turbojets roared to keep the aircraft aloft for a few more seconds. The sole passenger seated in the cabin paid no attention to the weather conditions or the dangerous landing. Since catching a commercial flight from Nice to London, and then on to Dallas, where the leased executive jet was waiting, he sat with his laptop open and his fingers dancing across the keys. When Eric had come up with his plan to fire the Russian ballistic projectile weapon, it had been the barest outline of an idea. He hadn't considered the tremendous amount of data he needed to make it work. Orbital speeds, vectors, the rotation of the Earth, the mass of the tungsten rods, and 100 other elements all had to be factored into his computations. With his naval background, he was more than confident he could do the mathematics, although he would have liked Murph's help. Mark had an innate grasp of trigonometry and calculus that would have made this so much easier. But then he would have insisted on taking command, and the chairman would have rightly given him the slot. Mark was simply more qualified to do this than Eric. Because this broke down to a communications exercise between the satellite and the computer, Holly Kasim would have been the next logical choice. The only problem was that Holly got sick on carnival rides and wouldn't have been able to do the work. Eric got tapped to do what only a handful of people had ever done. He would allow himself to get excited about it later, but for now, he had to work the numbers. The plane touched down, swaying dangerously on two wheels for a moment before the pilot could kick in the rudder to even her out again. They taxied a long way. The airstrip was over 3 miles long, and finally came to a massive hangar next to another unmarked executive jet. Eric closed up his laptop and grabbed his suitcase, an old Navy duffel that had followed him from Annapolis. The co-pilot opened the door, and Eric fought his way down the stairs, slitting his eyes against the sand blowing across the tarmac. There was a man near a small door set into a larger hangar door waving him over. Eric jogged the 40 feet to the door and ducked through. The stranger immediately closed it. There was a large aircraft in the center of the hangar, covered in canvas tarps. Its shape was hard to make out, but it was unlike anything else in the world.
"Damn dust plays havoc on the planes," the man griped.
You must be Eric Stone. I'm Jack Taggart.
It's an honor to meet you, Colonel, Eric said with a touch of hero worship. I read about you when I was a kid.
Taggart was in his 60s, with a leathery, weather-beaten face and clear blue eyes. He was ruggedly handsome, like an idealized figure of a cowboy, with a firm jaw and a day's worth of silver stubble.
You ready for the ride of your life?
Taggart asked, leading him to an office in one corner of the hangar. Eric grinned.
Yes, sir, I am.